you're less likely to be able to hear what other people are saying, and less likely to be able to talk about heaven. And what's pretty evident is that we're not there yet. We are not there yet. And the Bible gives us a hope, doesn't it, of something better. This world is wonderful in lots and lots of ways. But this isn't it. This most certainly isn't it. It's times like this that you're reminded, aren't you? I don't know what verses, if I asked you to think about heaven, which verses would come to your mind. But things like no more crying, no more pain, those things come to my mind and have always been a great comfort to me. And to know that that is the end, to know that that is the end, that is where we're going, is something that is a great blessing, isn't it, on the journey. Because the journey is not always easy. It is not always easy. So we thank God for his word, don't we, that it keeps us looking forward, doesn't let us sink in this world as if this was it, as if there's no relief, no hope. Gives us a sure and certain hope, doesn't it? The Bible gives us a sure and certain hope of better things to come. And we see with Jesus, the miracles of Jesus. People wonder why we don't necessarily see all those miracles today. But the time will come where there will be no sickness. We will be with Jesus and all will be well. All will be well. And that's a wonderful thing to think about, isn't it? Become increasingly the body is such a particular thing, but all will be well. Life from the dead, no more shadow, the shadow of death. That great psalm did the service on Friday, laid Maureen to rest. Though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. The rod and staff, they comfort me. We will have passed that valley. We'll never return that way again. We'll never need to say those words in that way ever again. It will be past. It will be finished. It will be over. We read in 1 Corinthians at the service, death, where is your sting? Death will be swallowed up in victory. These are all the Christian hopes, aren't they? And I was thinking about the resurrection very much on Friday. But heaven is something slightly different, isn't it? There's the resurrection of our bodies, that our own physical hope of a new body, fully. I was using the likeness of an acorn to an oak tree. So different will be the body that is to come. From an acorn to an oak tree, so different is the body that is to come. So much more glorious in its attributes and its powers. It's something really to think about, isn't it? It really is to think about. But that in itself, just to talk about the new body, is not enough when we're talking about heaven. There's more to it than that, isn't there? What do you think heaven's like? What do you think heaven's like? Do you have in your mind's eye something that comes to your mind? Does something come into your heart? If I just use the word heaven, you have no appetite, nothing satisfied, no thought of heaven at all. Is there a heaven? Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right, it's not the right answer. That's absolutely right, that is not the right answer. There are so many carnal views of heaven. People impose all their unfulfilled aspirations and they call it heaven, don't they? I was reading excerpts from the Quran today because, of course, they have a view of heaven, their paradise, and it is undoubtedly the gratification of physical desires, unfulfillable and unobtainable in this world, for men only. It is. I'm not saying that's their whole vision, but it is very central to that vision. And it's not heaven, it's a fantasy. And there's a world of difference, isn't there, between the reality of heaven and just a carnal fantasy, a kind of an idea that proceeds from your imagination that you impose and create as if somehow this will be yours. At last I'll get what I want. That's not heaven. That's not heaven. Any more than floaty clouds. But when you're hearing that reading, when you hear about thousand upon thousand, the voice like sounding rushing waters, when you think of the glory, I mean, do you love looking over a big vista and the weather rolling in and max that out? The God of creation, the God of creation in his own habitation. It's something to think about, isn't it? And it's been reduced, heaven's been reduced down to a place where everybody just turns up unannounced, not known, not knowing, walking right in and occupying their place. I remember with what heaviness of heart, I remember at my own father's funeral, somebody standing to speak at his funeral. Think of him there now, happily looking down upon us. You know, all this sort of thing. My father absolutely, categorically, to the end, refused that God even existed. So, unless the Lord has had mercy in some secret hour. But, you know, people have these fantasies. But what is heaven? Really, really. What is heaven? That's what we're here to have a little thing. And where were we going to find out? How could we possibly know? Where are we going to find out? It must be in this book. That's all we have, isn't it? This is the full and complete revelation of the will of God. Everything we need to know about everything we need to know about with regards to life and godliness is written in this book. And this is where we've got to turn, isn't it? And any experience we have or idea we have needs to be tested against what is written. What is written. And we need to be careful how we read too, don't we? You know, Jesus used to say to people, how do you read it? Because the truth is people read stuff into things, don't they? They make things to turn out how they want it to read. As opposed to hearing the word of the Lord, which is an entirely different thing. But we've got to go to the word. Some people seem to think that heaven is a state of mind. Nirvana. That's Buddhism for you, isn't it? Peace. I don't want anything. I have so disciplined myself to refuse all my desires, to see them for what they are, that I am just empty of desire and at absolute peace. Heaven. Is that heaven? Emptiness. See, the heaven of the Bible is full to overflowing. It is vibrant and filled and full of glory. You know that word glory is the Hebrew word kavod, which means it's a weight or a measure. It's full of substance and significance and meaning. I don't know what you find when you sort of watch something on TV and it's just flaccid. It has no substance or meaning at all. It is just words. It's just brah, brah, brah. Heaven is full of meaning and value and worth. Thrilling, thrilling. It is worth mentioning the word paradise. It is worth mentioning the word paradise. It's an ancient Persian word, paradise, and it means a walled garden. I like that word. A walled garden. And you think about some of the imagery you find in the book of Revelation. Trees, fruit, water, running water. There's a sense of nature in harmony, man and nature in harmony. Everything in its place. Everything ordered, beautiful, and such peace. Such peace. These are the sort of things that the words we associate with heaven conjure up. Queen Victoria, for example, she said, "We are not amused." you remember that? I don't know who she was speaking to, but he probably felt that that big afterwards. We are not amused. I think it was Benjamin Disraeli, actually. But royals can use the royal we, can't they? They can take their individual person and speak of themselves as if they're more than just themselves, because they are endued with majesty. So they can say we, because of the majesty of their person. And we accept that convention because of their place. And if you look in the book of Genesis in chapter 1 and verse 1, there's the word God written there. But if you were Hebrew scholars, you'd see that the word God is the word Elohim. Elohim. And that is a plural. It's a masculine plural. God is one. And yet he spoke, Elohim is a masculine plural, as if it's gods. Plural, as if there are many. And yet it is described in the masculine singular. He gods. So it doesn't make any sense, grammatically speaking, unless you realize that it is the same as the royal we. It is what's called the honorific plural. It's gods because of the majesty of God. He is one God, but he is simply majestic. It's as if the only way to talk about him is by describing him as if he was more than one, to amplify his glory. And in that same verse, as you go down, he created the heavens and the earth. You know the word heaven there, again, is plural, isn't it? Heavens, the heavens and the earth. What do you mean, heavens? What, as if there are sort of various levels, or is that what it means there? But it's the same, it's the honorific plural. It's one thing of such extraordinary majesty that the only way to describe it grammatically is to by putting it into the plural, to give it the royal we. The Hebrew word shami, which is the word that is pluralized there, is the word that in the King James you have translated as firmament. And in the modern translations, the expanse. And it's just the vast expanse. It's, you can't just by say the expanse of the heavens. It's just not enough to describe heaven. It's invested with a majesty and a beauty and a worth. It's the heavens. And when we're talking about heaven, It's this extraordinary depth and expanse full of, I think one of the exciting things about the generations we're living in is how this expanse that for so many centuries people stood on the face of this earth and looked up and they saw wonderful things, didn't they, at night, and looked up into the stars and wondered at all, and the clouds and the rain and all the wonder of it all. And I have seen with my eyes images of stars invisible to the naked eye. I've seen some of the depths of the universe, and it just goes on and on. And you look at these pictures and they look like they're just like an amoeba or a little cloud of dust, and you realize it's billions of stars and the expanse of heaven. It is just dwarfing and fills these little things we have, these little beating hearts of ours, with the only thing that can get into our hearts is awe. There's no room for anything else. You can't think. All you can sense is just the wonder of it. The wonder of it all. The creation in all its majesty. And when Solomon went about building a temple, you might want to go there in 1 Kings chapter 8, verse 27. See, he built this building, and either it entered into his head, or it maybe entered into somebody else's head, that this was going to be God's habitation on earth, a house for the Lord. And Actually, it just strikes him, does it, as he's praying. He's just there, chapter 8, verse 27. What do you think about God? He fills the heaven and the expression there, the heavens and the heaven of heavens cannot contain you. In other words, it's not enough. When he's thinking about heaven, it's not enough just to think about the honorific plural, just to say it's in the plural and how majestic it is. He has to add to it the heaven of heavens. He has to amplify it even further to try and give vent and give voice to just the vast glory of what is heaven, of what is made. It's the empty space, this great empty space. I love science. I don't know about you, I'm fascinated by science. And I love the fact that if you took a single atom, and you know it's got an electrons going around on the outside, and then in the center there's a nucleus. It's got protons and neutrons. Now, if you put the center of an atom in the middle of a football pitch, which we've been looking at rather a lot recently, and you put the neutrons and the protons in the middle of a football pitch, they'd be the size of a pinhead. And the electrons, the distance relatively to the electrons, would be out in the outer perimeters of the stadium. So the space between the electrons and the protons in the center is so vast, essentially every atom is 99.999% space. It's just a vast expanse, and the actual matter element, the part that is actually matter and substance, is so minute, and every single thing you can see, every solid thing you can see that looks like it's something, is actually almost entirely nothing. It's just space. It's vast, it's extraordinary. And Solomon recognizes that when you're talking about God, where does God live? Where does God abide? The idea that he would live in this house and this building that I've made. The heavens is not enough. The heavens of the heavens is not enough. All this is just God's glory is just... We run out. We've just run out of words. We just run out of vocabulary. We're completely out of our depth, aren't we? And yet, the psalmist in chapter 2, verse 4, sees that God sits in the heavens. He abides in the heavens. And there's the knowledge of God over the face of the earth, that he's here. God is everywhere, isn't he? Yeah? He is absolutely everywhere. The kids always ask me, at the Sunday school, you know, on the signposts and stuff, where is God? Where is God? And it's always a difficult one to answer, isn't it? And I don't know about you, but I say to them, well, if you can tell me where love is, then I think we'll have an answer. Where's love? Where is it? You can't put it in a cup. You can't put it in a jar. Can you? Some of them say, it's in my heart. And that's wonderful. But you can see, can't you, that everything is fearfully, wonderfully, lovingly made. Can you see the love of God expressed in all that is? He's everywhere. He's absolutely everywhere. There is nowhere he doesn't reach. And you just can't see God. You can't see God. People desperately want to see him, but you can feel him. You can know him. You can have a relationship with him, and he can live in you. So what is heaven? What is heaven then? Coming back to heaven, if God, even the idea that God is just in heaven, God isn't just in heaven, that's the point I've been rather labouring to get to. He's greater than heaven, and the heaven of heavens. It's greater than you, he's greater than me. What is heaven? Wayne Grudem, this is, who's a very thoughtful Christian and Christian writer, said something I thought was well worth listening to. He said, heaven is where God's presence can be most fully known in blessing. Heaven is where God's presence can be most fully known in blessing. God is everywhere, isn't he? God is everywhere. But our capacity to discern the manifest presence of God is limited. There are times where we are simply unaware that we are in him. In him we live, move, and have our being. We spend a lot of our times apparently ignorant of the immense glory before whom we stand at all times. And we conduct ourselves in a completely irreverent fashion, don't we, a lot of the time, as if he wasn't even there and wasn't worthy to be worshipped and praised and adored and loved and magnified all the days of our lives. Heaven is where the manifest presence of God is most apparent in all of creation. It's the place where it's so evident, unavoidable, inescapable. And that to bless the goodness of God. If I was to ask you where we turn that on its head, which is the place where his presence is most fully known in cursing, we'd have to come up with a different answer than heaven, wouldn't we? And there is such a place. There is such a place. I think in the reading that you read to us earlier, the horsemen and the... you could see God, there is a wrath. There is a wrath. But heaven is that place where his blessing is most abundantly manifest to all who are there with him in that place. And we have so many different visions of heaven in the Bible. Visions of God in heaven. Turn with me just for a moment to the book of Ezekiel, chapter 1. He has this vision. Saw a windstorm coming from the north, an immense cloud. Verse 4, this is flashing lightning, brilliant light. The center of the fire looked like a glowing metal in the fire. It looked like four living creatures. Their form was like that of a man. Each had four faces, four wings. Their legs were straight. Their feet were like those of a calf, gleaming and burnt like burnished bronze. So it goes on. And then you keep going down. As I looked, verse 15, at the living creatures, I saw the wheels on the ground beside each creature with its four faces, the appearance of the structure of the wheels. They sparkled like chrysolite. Each had the appearance of being like a wheel, intersecting a wheel as they moved, and so on. Verse 22, they spread out above their heads of the living creatures was what looked like an expanse. That's the same word. Sparkling like ice. Awesome. Under the expanse, their wings were stretched out towards each other. Each had two wings covering its body. And when the creatures moved, they heard the sound of the wings, like the roar of rushing waters, like the voice of the Almighty, like the tumult of an army. And as they stood still, they lowered their wings. And then came the voice from above the expanse of their heads, and they stood with lowered wings. Verse 27, I saw what appeared from the waist up to be looked like a glowing metal, as if full of fire. And from down he looked like he was fire, and brilliant light surrounded him, like the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day, and so was the radiance about him. That was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord when I saw it. It's a vision, isn't it? He's having a vision. And it's very similar, isn't it, to the kind of visions that you see in the book of Revelations. And they give you an insight, don't they? They give you an insight. It's something terrifying, it's something thrilling. And at the heart of it all, the center of it all, is this figure. There's this figure at the heart and the center of it all. And that's exactly what we find in the book of Revelation as well. The glory, the flashing, the thunder, and this figure standing in the center of it all. But these visions are not views of heaven. That's the point I'd want to make, if I can. they convey something to us, don't they? It conveys something to us. But these are not cine camera stills of heaven. These are not sort of sensory encounters, I put it to you, but they are visions shot through with symbols. But I don't want you to think just because something is there's symbols that it doesn't have a meaning. A symbol or a sign means something. It's pointing us to something. The glory of it all. Whatever it was that they saw, however they saw it, it stretched their capacity to speak in such a way as that is normal, straightforward, and logical to say it. But they saw something. They got an insight. When I think about heaven, I just get momentary glimpses with my heart. And how to put it into words, I struggle. I have to come to Scripture to find it. But I just know that there's something out there. It's a place. And I know there's a figure at the center of it, the center of the universe, at the center of the cosmos, at the center of all of this. There's somebody. And I know that person is Jesus. And Ezekiel, when he looked up, didn't know, but he knew he was the one, didn't he? He knew he was looking at the one who was at the center of it all. And I think in the end, heaven is where he is. Because it's Jesus, isn't it? And he is. I mean, God is spoken of as heaven. He's addressed as heaven. The kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of God. Jesus manifests. He is God. He is. To be near Jesus, to be with Jesus, is simply to be in heaven, isn't it? In the most majestic place. I'm going to try and wrap up. These new bodies we'll have when we see him, when we're there. I find it almost impossible to imagine really what it's like. I cannot really conceive what it would be like not to be decaying at all. To have simply no needs. It is inconceivable because my whole life, that's all we know, isn't it? Time passing. There'll still be time, but it won't be chasing us. We won't be chasing it. It'll just be there. To be absolute harmony with it all. And that's a wonderful thought. I just don't know what it's going to look like. But I know it's there. And I know God wants us to know that it's there. And he's telling us so. He's holding these things out to us, isn't he? And there's something real. There are real bodies for it. And when Jesus said, I go to prepare a place for you, It tells us something of the concrete nature of heaven. It's not just floating around. It really isn't just floating around. It's so much better than that. A place, a real place. He talks about mansions. Again, it's the majesty of it all. I don't believe we're all going to have like a, you know, a grotty 8-bedroom kind of with gold taps. You know, I just don't think that's what it means. But I think this place will be I just can't wait. Jesus at the center. Jesus is there. That's the other thing you get in the book of Revelation, is that Jesus is there. Jesus is in the city. Jesus is loved and honored. You know, there's no more gainsaying, no more criticism, no more clever arguments, no more nonsense, just peace and Jesus. That's heaven. That's heaven to me. And you mentioned it finally. We will still be ourselves. We will still be Carol. You will still be Carol in heaven. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. But there's a degree to which you'll also be just like Jesus. And that's already begun, hasn't it? That's already begun. We get little insights of Jesus being formed in us. It's still you, and yet somehow you're just so like Jesus. Just to be with somebody, when you're with somebody's stage of real godliness, it's just like there's a little touch of heaven, isn't it? It's a little touch of heaven. That's just going to be great, isn't it? You know, all our own thoughts, our inclinations, just centered on Christ, centered on God, at peace. Yes, bliss, absolute bliss, wonderful things to come. I probably talked too long. You've been to the convention. What have they been saying? Tell me, because I'm really interested.